Tune in to Radio Stormer on the dailystormer.com.
TWO Radio at Radio Stormer on the dailystormer.com.
Hello and welcome to Truth Will Out Radio once again. Today we are pre-recording this because Dennis is unable to make the live recording on Friday. I hope that doesn't disappoint too many of you. We do get a few people in the chat room on Friday when we do our live programs, but we haven't had many people calling in yet, so hopefully this won't make too much of a difference. I'll just remind people that we do have a chat room, we do have a live stream where we constantly play Pro White Audio. It's always new stuff on there, it's always been improved, and I introduce it sometimes, and we also play repeats of Radio Stormer productions on there. You can subscribe to our podcasts, subscribe to the feed. You can find all of that in the sidebar of the Daily Stormer .com on the right hand side. So now I've got those advertisements out of the way, I'll introduce my co-host, Mr. Dennis Wise, producer of Adolf Hitler, The Greatest Story Never Told. How are you doing today, Dennis?
Well, I'm fine. I haven't been up too long, but I suppose I'll be coming round by every second that passes.
Yeah, pretty much like me as well. I had a bit of a late one last night. We had Matthew Heimbach on the Trad Youth Network doing his first live programme. Which I think it went well, actually. It's very hard to just talk yourself and just talk constantly for an hour and think of things to say that are going to be interesting. And he does a really good job of it. At least we've both got each other here while we make a program up. So
we try and bounce off each other, don't we?
Yeah, we try to. I sometimes
wish there was somebody more professional, but no, we have to.
We are only amateurs, but we do what we can do. Well, we got two things to really sort of talk about this week. I'm not sure which one to start. Well, we'll start off with some good news first. And I've just noticed this on the Daily Stormer site. And this isn't actually a Daily Stormer article, but it's republished there. Adolf Hitler leading the polls in the Czech Republic. Jewish protests have forced Czech magazine Tiden to hastily withdraw an article which indicated that around 60% of respondents would vote for Adolf Hitler if he returned today and promised to rid Europe of the current wave of invaders disguised as asylum seekers. So how's that? 60% of people said that they would vote for Adolf Hitler, and the magazine removed it, obviously because the people didn't vote for who they were supposed to be voting for.
I'm not surprised in one sense that they've hastily had to withdraw it, but I'm surprised in another sense that it's only 60%, because I'm quite sure if you did a proper poll, you know what I mean, it'd be up there in the 80s and 90s.
Oh, it's interesting because I've been recently doing narrations on this Communism in Germany pamphlet, and a lot of the support that the German communists were getting was coming from Czechoslovakia. The Czechs were smuggling weapons across the border to them, bombs and all these explosive devices. So at one time, Czechoslovakia was very pro-communism, and obviously not any longer. I mean, they must have been under communist rule for quite a few years. They've obviously thrown that off, and now they're fully supporting Adolf Hitler. 60%?
Yeah, well, maybe that's the answer to the question of why the ethnics were getting so much grief down in Czechoslovakia, because if they've got a National Socialist government in power and all the ethnics are vocally saying we need to go back to Germany and to this under this umbrella of a new government, obviously there's people in Czechoslovakia disliking this National Socialist government, and maybe that is one of the reasons why they got a lot more problems being ethnically German, as eventually did in Poland as well. So it doesn't surprise me, but all these countries what went under after the war under the iron rule of Soviet Russia, they're not places that you'd have booked for a holiday.
No, they're all pretty run down, grim. I think the people there are pretty good. I mean, I visited Latvia and Lithuania, and Lithuania was pretty run down, but the people there were great, you know, really, really friendly people.
Bosnia. Yeah, same in Bosnia. I went to Bosnia, and, you know, all the buildings are full of bullet holes and rocket shells, but the people were wonderful.
Yeah, I had a similar experience myself, and also there was very, well, we could count the amount of foreigners on one hand, really. We were literally counting the amount of blacks that we saw on one hand. We didn't see one for the first couple of days. When we did, it was a shock. And looking at this report here from Czechoslovakia, they have also been criticized for actually making the race known of criminals. So when there's attacks on white people, they've actually been saying that the attacker was from such and such a country, which is a really good thing. And obviously people are going to clearly see from that the high rate of crime that comes with these immigrants that are flooding our countries. And Germany is calling for more of Europe to take more immigrants. They've said that they're going to take 800,000 this year, and they don't mind it going up to 1 million. And they're demanding that more of Europe take more immigrants. It's just insane. Anybody that's watching this and watching this narrative on the news is going to be so confused. You know, they call it immigrant crisis. And what they mean, they don't mean it's a crisis for Europe being flooded with these immigrants. They mean it's a crisis because the immigrants are having problems getting in.
Well, I think if they watch part 24 of Adolf Hitler, the greatest story ever told, they'll understand totally why Merkel's pushing for more and more immigrants. As it does have a section on this Jewish intention to bring the whole of Europe multicultural. So, but the other, you just reminded me actually when you said, you know, talking to immigrants, and one of the biggest shocks I ever got were during the 1980s or possibly 90s, when I was up in Scotland looking for a place, and I asked an agent the direction, and he spoke with a Glaswegian accent. It really were a shock to the system.
Yeah, I bet it was. You do see that. You see Asians in Scotland wearing kilts and claiming to be Scottish. I mean, they've got a minister, I forget what he is, but there's a picture of him wearing all this pink stuff and then wearing a kilt. And he's I forget what it is, but it's something really quite ludicrous that they would put a foreigner in that position. It's crazy, just replacing all the white people. That's what it boils down to. And when you say that it was this plan for multiculturalism, I mean, that goes back to Coudenhove Kalergi and his book Practical Idealism, where he said that the race of the future, the European race of the future, was going to be a mongolized, half Caucasian, half African, looking like the modern day Egyptian Arabs, ruled over by a Jewish aristocracy. Aristocracy means noble, so it's a bit of the wrong word to describe it. I don't know what would be the right one, a kleptostocracy, maybe, or a degenerate stocracy. But this actually then came to fruition with the EU, with the European Union. And they still have awards today, the Coudenhove Kalergi Award for services rendered to the European Union. So it was all a big plan that was put on hold while the Second World War went on. This EU, they'd been talking about that since the beginning of the 20th century and making plans for that. And the League of Nations was a forerunner for it, where they wanted to get all the countries of Europe together and fit and have it like a big state ruled over by an unelected bureaucracy that was controlled by Jews. And he wrote about this and thought that this was a good thing. So this is what is now happening. This is why we are being flooded with these invaders, these different races, and why they're promoting race mixing, because that's what they want. They want a mongolized people completely cut off from their heritage and their ancestors, with no loyalty to one another, because then they're easy
to rule over. Yeah. Mm. Yeah, Makes sense. This has been, like I said, it's been said for quite some time. And these people over in Liverpool the other week who were attacking people who were trying to march, they all consider this, or they reckon they consider it all to be a conspiracy theory, where it's actually happening in front of our eyes. The reality is there. England, for instance, is one of those countries now where it's difficult to find anybody who is English. So, and they've been at it for quite some time now, and they're still pushing and pushing and pushing in Europe. So, the proof's in the pudding.
Well, it's not a theory, is it? I mean, these people did conspire to do this to us, and we can see it from their writings. It's not a theory. It's like Barbara Spector talking about how Europe has to become multicultural, and the Jews are going to be at the centre of that. I mean, that's not a conspiracy theory. You can look that up online.
It's in Patch 24.
From the horse's mouth.
Yeah, I've got in Patch 24 saying that, and I think it were Sarkozy in France was actually considering bringing in more laws to encourage race mixing, because they already had some laws brought in to encourage it.
Yeah, he wanted to force that on everyone. And of course, while this is going on, the Jews are saying, well, we need DNA tests for people that come into Israel, and we have to put up advertisements to prevent Jews marrying non-Jews. And I think it's illegal for Jews to marry non-Jews in Israel. So they've got the laws that we should have. I mean, we're white people, we're a pure race, we're not a mongolized race, and yet we are promoting mongrelization, and you've got the Jews, who are a mongrelized race, and they are promoting just marriage to their own. It's a crazy state of affairs. But you bring up there your documentary, Dennis, and I believe you've had something that's been happening along those lines, where you've been working on that this week that you wanted to talk about.
Well, I was hoping to have it up and running now already, but fortunately, I do run tests every now and again just to check out if everything's fine on YouTube to go up, and put it up on over the weekend just to test things, and it was banned worldwide. And the reason it was banned worldwide was for this 60-second piece taken from The World at War, which was a huge documentary in the 70s. And no matter what I did to it, because I managed to get other pieces up there that have been previously banned, no matter what I did to the soundtrack or whatever, it continually got banned and would ban the whole video worldwide. So, funny enough, I went on YouTube just to check, and there's about three or four people have the full 10-hour version of the old documentary up there. So, for some reason, for this 60 seconds weren't being allowed. So, anyway, I went back to the drawing board, and there's some certain things I were looking for, and I actually found a piece which is quite stunning, really. I don't want to reveal too much because obviously I want to put in documentary and bring it out shortly. But it is really quite revealing, and there's no doubts, there's no ifs, no buts. It's coming straight from the horse's mouth. Exactly how these people feel about people like you, me, and all the other guy. So that will now hopefully be replacing the piece what I had, but it goes on for longer than a minute. So the old documentary now has to be the old episode rather has to be all restructured, which I'm working on at the moment. So it'll probably be at least another week, but it is quite revealing, this piece, along with the other segments in part 10 of Communism by the Back Door. It's really quite revealing, and there's no hiding. Nobody can deny what's being said, and it's been said by quite important rabbi.
Yeah, I think I may know the piece that you're talking about. It's interesting there you say that you've got the whole series up there. People have got a whole 10-hour series up there, and that is still up there. But if you put up your bit with a small part from it, was this the World at War?
It was World at War. I think it was the Foreign Secretary at the time who'd gone over to the Soviet Union and come back again. And the commentator was actually saying that it was a possible rival to Churchill. And when he came back over again, he gave this speech, which I edited right down. And what he was actually saying was, I know a lot of people have a fear of the, he didn't call it communism ideology, he called it the Russian ideology. I know some people have a fear of the Russian ideology, but I can assure you that the Russians have no intention whatsoever to interfere in any other country And I have this from the words of Stalin himself. And that, I couldn't get in. You know, I may put a version up out there somewhere on one of them other YouTube channels, you know, a True Tube maybe, you know, but at the moment, YouTube, I can't get it up there.
That would be a good one to put there. I was going to say, I mean, because even Churchill admitted that it was the Jews that were behind this communist uprising, this Marxist group, the Bolsheviks. I mean, it's quite a famous piece that he wrote, saying that it was the Jews that were behind it. You've also got the MI6 reports, the intelligence reports that say that it was the Jews behind communism. You've got the Jews themselves saying that they're behind communism, and then you can just look at the ethnicity of all the major players in communism, and they were Jewish. That Gingrich Yehuda, or Yagoda, the biggest mass murderer the world has ever known, was a Jew. He's interconnected with Nick Clegg's family, the previous Liberal Democrat leader. So they're all connected with these Jews, intermarried with them. Our aristocracy in Britain, according to the guy that writes Burke's Peerage, is so interconnected with the Jews that if there was ever he was talking about the stock exchange, I think, but if ever there was some tragedy was to happen, it would affect all the British aristocracy just as much as it would affect the Jews, because they're so intertwined and intermarried. This is what the Jews did when they came over here into Britain. They started marrying into the aristocracy. When the aristocracy, they would get the aristocracy into debt, and then they would get one of their relatives to then marry the person that was in debt. So the person that was in debt could then pay off his debts. But of course, then all his children would be Jewish. And this is how we end up with people like David Cameron as our prime minister, who's half Jewish. His grandfather, Emil Levin, who wrote books on the Talmud, and another banker. So this is why our government appear to be traitors. Half of them have got Jewish blood in them. So they're bound to be traitors towards us. You know, this is the fulfillment of Kudenhove Kalergi's idea that we should have a Jewish state running everything, and we would just be the mongolized slaves of that state.
Well, they'd have visualized Cameron leading the way with homosexuality in the Church of England, you know, one of the stalwarts of Christianity, you know, which wouldn't never once over have entertained women bishops and priests or homosexuality, and all accepting it now, as does the Vatican, to be honest.
Well, every time that they put a priest of the Church of England on the BBC now, it's a female. It's a female one. Every time.
Yeah. It's same when you get an advert, really. Like, you know, you'll see three people coming down the road, and one's a woman, one's an half caste, and the other one looks gay.
Yeah, it's constant promotion of it.
Constantly. Yeah, the dogs are probably the only genuine thing in the advert.
Well, the dog will probably be a mongrel as well.
Yeah, but don't blame dogs. I mean, dogs can't think for themselves, can they? You know?
Yeah, we're supposed to look after them. I mean, we used to be, you know, we used to have all these different breeds of dogs, and we used to be, you know, known for breeding different types of dogs and breeding different types of plants and selective breeding. We used to do all this with our livestock. So what prevented us from applying the same principles to our own behaviour?
Well, the thing is, like, even with Darwin's theory, you know, the Jews have always wanted us to believe that, well, they wanted me to believe anyway, that I come from a monkey. And I absolutely refuse it, you know. So is it any wonder they're trying to bring civilization down to the same level as the animal world?
Well, yeah, and it even says in the Protocols of Zion that they're going to use Darwinism to take us down. And personally, I think that, you know, that when we were built in the image of God, you know, you've got something to live up to. If you're told that you just come from a monkey, then you've got nothing to reach up to.
Monkey standards, haven't you?
Yeah. You know, I think that's a large part of it.
And yet to think what a monkey's standards are, moral standards.
Oh, you look at the way they behave. Look at the way those bonobo monkeys behave. Just mating with all the different members of the family. This is what the Jews do. They try and make out that the meaning of life is just hedonism. And that the more sex you're going to have, the more fulfilled you're going to be with as many different people. And that's actually homosexual behavior. Homosexuals are promiscuous. They sleep with as many different people as they possibly can. And this is what's being portrayed as being masculine today. They portray it as being masculine to have as many different women as you can. And that's actually a homosexual way of behaving. And when we ruled the world, ruled the seas and had the British Empire, we were known for being repressive about our sexuality because we did repress our sexuality. People didn't just sleep with loads of different people. And when they were married, they didn't have sex all the time because it would have meant that they would have had lots of children. So they repressed that sexual urge. And that sexual urge, once it's repressed, has got to come out somewhere. I mean, it's a creative urge. So it comes out in creativity. It comes out in conquering other continents.
Well,
doing
I believe
amazing things.
India's suffering from that at the moment, I believe, whereas the pushing of pornography has always been a Jewish tie. And at the moment, see all these rapes in India, and with the pushing of homosexuality, the two things come hand in hand. But yeah, I mean, at the end of the day, they already have a certain control over the world, whereas they can manipulate, they know how to manipulate mass audiences, they're skilled at it, and they use these social engineering techniques to actually fulfill the target, and they've been quite adept at it for a long time now.
Well, yeah, in India, they used to have the lowest divorce rate in the world. It used to be less than a percentage, and I believe it's now getting close to 10%. And this is what the promotion of pornography has done. They've got a rape epidemic over there, but now they're teaching feminism as well. You ended up with all these divorces. And this is the end result of feminism, is divorce. There's nothing worse for a child than, you know, for their parents to split up. You know, something that should be stable, you know, a stable basis that they know they can rely on having mum and dad there. And they're told that it's a great thing that nowadays that they can split up. More people seem to come from single parent families and families that stick together. So the very foundation that you need to build on as a child has been broken down right from the very start. So right from kids have got to fight against that to try and overcome that right from the very start. It's tragic.
Yeah. Well, it shows you how democracy doesn't work, because when you've got 2% of a nation which can control them, where does democracy come into it? Because when the masses are all being driven or educated or brainwashed into a certain direction, which only by 2% of people in the nation, then it's a problem. It's easy to overcome, and this democracy, people say, this is the best way of governing. It's one of the worst, because it is dictatorship, but from behind the curtains, when, like I said, 2% of a nation can get control of a government and then implement certain things which would not have gone down if everyone, one man, one vote, had the right to vote on. Except, for instance, you know, the war in Iraq. You know, the majority of the British people didn't want to go to Iraq. But that was overruled by this 2% who manipulated enough people in the government to force it through. Hence, there's your document, democracy.
Well, democracy itself, I mean, it relies on this idea that the people that are ruled can also be rulers at the same time, which is an impossibility. And when you say that it's going to be one man, one vote, and it's the will of the people, the majority of people are incompetent. The majority of people
have no interest.
Yeah, they have no idea of what's actually going on, no interest. And what they have been told that's going on, or the little bit of it that they do grasp, is going to be coming from the media, which is owned by the Jews, and is going to be just subverting them. It's not going to be telling them the truth. So even if you did actually have a viable democracy and you didn't have, Jews running it at the top, it's going to be making the most ridiculous decisions. It's going to be making the worst decisions possible for the people. And you're still going to have the worst possible people being voted in, because you're going to have the least qualified people that are actually putting them in place. And yet people think democracy is a great thing because they've been sold this lie that they can be, you know, that they can be the rulers, when really you can't have a ruler being ruled at the same time. They've said that the people are sovereign, and we're not. You can't be sovereign and be a subject, or both at the same time.
Well, the problem is, like, the rich money men control the politicians, like Cameron. The Tory party is funded by the Friends of Israel, conservative Friends of Israel. In America, we know all about the two parties over there. Congress is bought, which is another clip again in this coming episode, but I've got. So, you know, it's got nothing to do with democracy. You know, as long as people with all the money can bribe and manipulate men of power, it doesn't really matter who votes for what.
The other side that comes into it is ethnicity. You need to have people all of the same ethnicity and all speaking the same language as well, to say that you're all working in the same direction. If you've got a multicultural society with different races there, they're all going to be trying to get what they want for their race. So it's, anything good that can happen is going to be cancelled out by the other side fighting against it. And I think the only...
It's a bit like the announcement yesterday of the government giving £500 million to Trident up in Scotland, and the Scottish Nationalist League, they're saying, you know, it's not even been announced yet, and yet you're showing that arrogance of paying so much money, especially when, you know, we're in a time of debt and uncertainty. So they're always able to find the money for these wars or for these, you know, new weapons that update. It is quite a joke, really, to see the country in the state it is, but knowing that they can find the money anytime they want. And this is what's really so annoying to me. When a nationalist can, you know, like Hitler, could be in power and the nation benefits of that country being wealthy. This has never been the case over in England. In fact, probably the wealthiest the majority have felt is during the 1970s. But even all that, you know, quickly evaporated. And so all the usual, what usually does, it drives the mass of money to the little amount of people in the country, and leaves the people, the mass people of the country, chasing their tails in debt forever. It's going round and round in circles. So what you've got in fact is a criminal cabal, you know, because they know what they're doing and the rest of the country really don't.
I think part of that is based on usury and the idea that money can make money. Instead of, you know, creating things to make money, people are expecting money to make money. And one of the things with Trident, and it's just my thoughts on this, you keep hearing the anti-nuclear protesters and the SNP saying, oh, but it's a weapon that will never be used. It's pointless. It's a weapon that will never be used. It's not a weapon that will never be used. It's a weapon that's in constant use, because the threat of that helps to keep the balance of power. So I do think if we're going to have those weapons in the world, that we do need to have them, whether it's in the form of a submarine or not. But if other people have got them, we need them.
Yeah. But then the end result is, you know, the end of the world, so nobody wins. That's the problem.
Yeah, and no, I don't think anybody's going to detonate them. I think the worry is...
I don't know.
Terrorists get hold of them.
Well, if a country decides we're going to lose this war, you know, I'm not convinced that they're not going to go down without fighting and even possibly win by striking with a nuclear. I think a nuclear war has never happened, but every war has gone the full way. So if they didn't use the nuclear weapons, it'd be the first time the war has never gone all the way, which I find hard to believe, to be honest.
I think, you know, we've also got to have them when you've got Israel there with their Samson option. So they've got all their weapons, all their nuclear missiles pointed at Europe. You know, how can we give up having our nuclear?
Yeah, but we're on their side anyway, aren't we?
Yeah. I mean, nobody has ever investigated them. they talk about Iran not being signed, and they're the only ones that are not signed up to the non-proliferation treaty, which is a treaty not to create any more nuclear missiles or weapons than they've already got. And Israel is the only country in the world not signed up to that. Nobody knows exactly how many weapons that they've got. And the way they got them was by cheating and spying on America and stealing secrets.
Well, I have a different theory. I think after World War II, you know, that was a war that the Jews won. And I think ever since World War II, if you look at what they've been doing with impunity. You know, they can go bomb Syria, and not a word said. They can go into Palestine, kill people for weeks on ends. You know, the minimum of people complaining. You know, they do things with impunity, which means they really are in control of things. And so when you say they're pointing the weapons towards Europe, we're pointing the same weapons in the same direction of Russia, because I feel that's going to be the next war. So you got the Russians facing our nuclear weapons, you got facing America's and NATO's nuclear weapons, and they've got Israel's nuclear weapons. And so if that war ever did kick off, I'm not convinced the world's going to be here when it's all finished. That's all I'm saying, man.
Yeah, it's almost like America and Europe got them pointed at Russia. Russia have got them pointed at America and Europe. And Israel have got them pointed at America, Europe and Russia.
And those.
With nobody pointing them at Israel.
Exactly. who knows?
They are completely immune. I mean, you bring up the fact they went into Syria. I mean, that is an act of war. They've declared war on Syria so many times by flying over there and dropping bombs on the place. I mean, you imagine if a plane flew over Britain and dropped a bomb on one of our army barracks. That's an act of war. And yet they regularly do this to Syria. Israel regularly does this to Syria. And Bashar al-Assad, I mean, if he knows that if he fights back, then that's it. You know, the America will start bombing him. So he can't really fight back. He's got to show incredible patience and just not go for it. You know,
he can't react, can he? No, exactly.
And he's got to be a really sensible president to be doing that. I mean, he's not of the ISIS mindset, you know, the people that are being funded by America to go and attack him. The media keeps saying, you know, that Bashar al-Assad is such a bad guy, but I think everybody can see that he's really the good guy.
Well, it's the Jewish media. The Jewish media is saying it. This is the thing, see, this control they've got over the at least the whole Western world at the moment, you know, is with impunity. I mean, they're putting Holocaust lessons in our schools. They're changing the curriculum to what is a communist type curriculum, where children are being taught how to make love with their own sex. And they're doing it with impunity. And we, you know, no one can turn around and say, Israel, stop what you're doing, because either they bought all the governments or, you know, everyone's in agreement with them, what's in power at the moment. So, World War II, I know, was a disaster for Christian Europeans, but every day it's a bigger disaster than what I thought. You know, there's only, like I said, there's only Russia, and I'm not a big fan of Putin, you know, but the fact is that he has got the morals of a white European, and you know, when he interfered with Syria, enough's enough now. There's too many people being killed here, etc. And you know, let's sort this out and go for common sense. And he's now got the wrath of the Rothschilds. He's going to face the wrath of the Rothschilds at some point, which we mentioned last week about the reason why Iran is now making deals with America. And we're once over America. We're under Bush, at least we're up for destroying Iran. They want to get Iran out of the way, you know, happily sort that deal, and then turn their attentions to Putin and Russia. But that obviously goes against all the principles of the Jews in Israel, because they want to clear that last bastion military country down there called Iran, and that leaves them completely free and clear. So it looks to me like it's one big chess game, and at some point, it has to kick off. I'm pretty convinced. I know Putin's convinced.
We got some criticism last week for saying that Russia was in a similar situation, but Russia is in a similar situation to what Germany was in, surrounded by enemies, increasing their weapons and increasing their rhetoric. You know, he's got no option but to start, you know, implementing defensive measures. You know, he's got to start increasing his weapons just to, because you've got all these missile bases popping up, pointing at him, that are being set up all around the outskirts of the former Soviet Union.
You know, he's been driven into deals with other countries as well, because at the last great Moscow parade, when they were celebrating the 70 years of winning World War II, one of them stood right next to him was the Chinese guy. So, you know, them two is probably the last thing getting together is what the West wanted. But by their actions alone, they're driving that actual joining together. There's also the BRICS, of course. So that's going to come into play. And that's always been a thorn in the side of the Rothschilds when somebody's trying to get another means of dealing financially. So, I wish I could sit here and say I don't think there's ever going to be a nuclear war, but everything tells me that's the road we're going down.
I hope that we don't. I think I think Putin is. I think he's got a fairly level head on his shoulders. I think I don't think he's going to got a trigger finger.
West. I don't think there's enough in the West to pull trigger. I don't think Cameron's not. It's not beyond him.
I mean, some of the other criticisms are, you know, there are a lot of pictures of Putin with Jews, but, you know, Russia is a federation, and Birobidzhan is part of Russia, and Birobidzhan is a Jewish oblast. It's a Jewish country that's actually in Russia, and they expect Putin to represent them. So, of course, he's going to be having something to do with Jews. It's like, it's like Cameron having something to do with people in Northern Ireland or the people in Scotland. The Jews in Birobidzhan are part of the Russian Federation. So, of course, he's going to be representing them. Of course, there's going to be pictures of him with the Jews. They are a part of Russia, but these Jews in Birobidzhan don't cause the problems that the Jews in Israel cause. You don't hear of these Jews in Birobidzhan attacking their neighbours. Or
I think they're all better.
or subverting, the Russian Federation at all, right?
Yeah, but once you see when a pussy riot getting knocked all around Pick Stadium, you'll think twice, I think.
I don't think Putin is that bad. Look at the way he dealt with Pussy Riot, look at the way he he's even banned the Simpsons as being degenerate and being a bad influence on young people. They won't allow any of this promotion of homosexuality. They won't allow their children to be adopted by America anymore because they know that children are just going to be handed to homosexuals. You know, he has taken a stand for all this. He said European traditions is what we stand for.
Well, I found it amusing the other day. I saw a piece on the internet. We said that the Jews, they had a big rally apparently over in America somewhere in a football stadium, and said that they were complaining about the internet because the reason why was, I mean, we all know that pornography has always been a Jewish weapon of social engineering, but apparently there's all these Jewish kids now like all watching pornography on the internet, and these Jews were cracking up about it, which is kind of ironic.
I bet. Well, I'm surprised they actually went to this rally themselves. And did you see that they hired Mexicans to go and protest gay pride? The Orthodox Jews did. So they had these Mexicans. Yeah, they had these illegal Mexicans there holding up Jewish signs protesting gay pride because they didn't want to go there themselves to see the cause. Oh. So they'll try and, they won't allow their children to watch television because they know what's on it. They know they're the one, the television is for the goyim. Taking the goyim down. That's for demoralizing the goyim. They certainly don't want their kids watching it. They want their kids to be studying their version of history.
So Talmud.
And the Talmud and get them. I mean, if you study the Talmud, you get everything paid for. You get benefits. You don't have to go to, and fight in their army in Israel, and you get, paid just to study that for the rest of your life. Yeah. So they, they pay their kids to study. Whereas in our countries, you have to pay yourself to study now with university. Now, a university is supposed to be for the brightest kids in the country so that they can then later on serve their country with innovation and inventions and all the things that they create. So you really just want the best people, and you want to invest as much time in getting them to learn as much as you can. But instead of that, we charge people to do that now.
Exactly.
And we try to, and we say everybody should be going to this university. And Tony Blair wanted to see everyone at university. All that will do is lower the standards of learning, lower the standards of intelligence, make loads of money for the banks.
Exactly. Yeah. I mean, how can students be in debt in any right moral society? It's crazy.
No, it's backwards way of thinking, because, you know, really you want the brightest people to be taught as much as you can,
and not be worried to pay the next bill.
Yeah, and this goes back, the tradition of free learning for the brightest people in Britain goes back over 1,000 years. It goes back all the way to Alfred the Great in the 9th century. You know, so you're talking 1,200 years of free education for the most brightest people. And now they're charging them almost as much money as it costs to get a mortgage for a house.
You know, exactly.
40, 50 grand you're looking at to go to university.
And there's no complaints, though. That's what I'm saying. It's impunity. There's no complaints. If anybody complains, it's anti-Semitic.
Yeah, well, this is how you can really see that they're the ones controlling everything. Because they've even got laws in place for people that criticize them. Anyone that criticizes them is anti-Semitic. And then they fund their baying mobs of idiots to attack people that stand up and try to speak the truth, like National Action the other week, where you had hundreds of, over 1,000 of these Antifa, screaming mob of Antifa attacking them. But this actually brings me up to a positive thing that happened. Recently, there was a protest in Australia at the Bendigo Mosque. And
according
to some reports, there were 1,000 patriots there to 100 Antifa. So it was 10 to 1 positive.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's not always the Antifa outweighing in numbers the patriots and the nationalists. The last one that National Action did, before they did the one in Liverpool, the one in Newcastle, they outnumbered the Reds there as well.
So yeah, I think that's more organised. Liverpool, aren't they? It's been a red town for a long time, that.
Well, it's red and black, pink, all different colours. This is just the thing. Our cities are no longer our cities. You know, we've got London is now minority white. Birmingham is probably minority white. Luton is. All the major cities are gradually being taken over by these other races, and yet our media is cheering this on and saying this is such a wonderful thing. And it's clearly just ethnic cleansing. And the people, the older people, you know, they realize this and they can see this, and they really don't understand it. You can see the confused look on their faces when you talk to them about what's happening, because they just don't understand why it is that our media and our politicians aren't saying anything about this. But what they don't realize is that the people that are saying something about this and that have been saying it for years are the ones that are smeared. It's the National Front and the British National Party. You know, if you bring them up, they'll still say, oh, they're dreadful people. But hang on a minute, they're the people that were warning about this. They're the ones that actually stood up for this. But they still don't make that connect, that those are the parties that they need to be supporting.
It's the Jewish media what paint them people black, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, this is, as you say, and this has been going on for so long. Really, the only viable form of government that you can have is fascism, and that prevents any of this happening. When you've got fascism, you've got everybody working together to achieve the same goal. You've got the most highly qualified person that's making the decisions, that's responsible.
The country benefits from it all, financially as well, so you're quite right.
That's responsible for making these decisions. You've got a focal point for the nation. You know, this, and basically, I mean, fascism, I think it follows on from what we had with monarchies. Originally, we had somebody that would be at the front of the battle, that was the most intelligent, that had had the best education, that had the best genes, and we knew it was hereditary. We knew that the best people would pass on their genes, so we had a king. And then our kingly lines all got corrupted. We got this democracy thing being brought in, and fascism was, a way of trying to get back to that. But we couldn't use the king anymore because the kingly lines had become corrupted. We just had to hope that we were just lucky enough to have people like Adolf Hitler and Mussolini and Codriano and various other fascist leaders that have had that spark and been able to unite the people and be that focal point. I mean, this is why, again, I think, you know, why it's so important that we have focal points in our movement that we can rally around. You know, people like Andrew Anglin, Matthew Heimbach, Angelo John Gage, people that are spokesmen for us that people can see and think, yeah, I support them, you know, and allow them to be spokesmen for us and not, you know, pick at them for small things or make out their agents or whatever, because they're taking huge risks. But we do need these focal points, you know?
Yeah, it's funny because I can remember the BNP once winning a by-election in Rochdale. It always sticks with me the fact that they wouldn't allow them a victory speech as they would any other of the political parties. So two or three of them stood on the stage and they put tape across their mouths and just stood there. And that was so significant to me. It was such a poignant moment where you realise there's no such thing as free speech. When they'd won that by-election and they weren't allowed to give a victory speech.
Was that actually portrayed on the media? Did the media allow people to see that?
So it must have been, but I think they were saying like it was right for them not to actually show them giving this speech because they're racist. But that is, you know, put that aside, the actual point they were making was so poignant with this tape across the mouths of at least three of them that I can remember. And it never left me. And that's probably the day I did realise there's no such thing as free speech at all.
Well, this is the thing. I mean, they've warped the meaning of free speech. And free speech is now pornography. Free speech is freedom for the Jews to corrupt the minds of our young.
Or it's free speech if the government agree with you.
Yeah, only free to say what we want you to say. I mean, people don't say anything different, a ban from coming into Britain. And pornography, I mean, this has been highlighted so many times, especially by E. Michael Jones. I mean, it's a weapon. They use this. When Israel went into Palestine, the war in Palestine and in Lebanon, first thing they start doing is broadcasting pornography on all the TV.
But they know that if they can control passion, once passion takes over from, you know, legitimate thinking, that's a problem then, because, and they've known it for a long time, these people, because with social engineering, if you can passion of a nation, and certainly pornography is one of them ways of doing that, then it makes everything so easy to control. And that's exactly what they've done with pornography. It's what Israel did when they went into Palestine. It's what they're doing in India at the moment. It's what they've done in the West since the World War. In fact, there's something I heard the other day, something about when they first tried it in Hollywood in 1933, the Catholic Church in America was strong enough to call a halt to it by saying, we don't agree with these films that you're bringing out, you know, whether you're pushing homosexuality or whatever, which they hadn't done in Germany previously. We don't agree with that. And they called out the members of the Catholic Church in Philadelphia not to go to any of the theatres. And within a matter of weeks, Warner Brothers were losing $100,000 a week at the picture houses. And eventually they had to back down. And for nearly 30 years, pornography and the rest of the garbage that they pushed was lying dormant there all the time. But come the 1960s, it was a different place, different era. And I think I can't remember the title of the film now, but it was a Holocaust film, one of the first Holocaust films, and it showed a woman with bare breasts. And when the Catholic Church again tried to organise some kind of a dispute against it, it never happened. By that time, people had grown tired of the Christianity thing, and the media had done the job on that kind of religion. So it never happened, and that then opened up the gates then for the rest of the 1970s, I think, come Linda Lovelace and Deep Throat, part, you know, the mainstream pornography films started to come out, and corruption of society was on its way.
Oh, it's interesting there that the first time that they had the nudity was in the Hollow Hoax film, obviously trying to reinforce the Hollow Hoax with that.
Well, it reminded me a bit about Schindler's List, because although it goes out on a, you know, 18 certificate for anybody over 18 and not under, they'll push it in schools. And there's certain scenes in that film where, you know, obviously quite sexually suggestive to a, especially to a school kid. And I don't believe for 1 minute they cut the scenes.
Well, they're bound to have them in there. But it's also, as you say, like Deep Throat, the American pornography film. And the I think the informer on the Nixon scandal, they called him Deep Throat as well. So you got this meme out there, this Deep Throat meme, which was also the name of this pornography film. So there's all these subtle ways of pushing this onto people. It's like the word for a bikini itself is from the Bikini Atoll, from the nuclear bomb testing. So the effect of the bikini on men was like a bomb going off. And you think, well, a bomb going off, that's a weapon. That's attacking people. It means that the defences were blown away. They had no defences. They couldn't stop looking. You know, they couldn't look away. They couldn't think about anything else. Their mind had been hijacked. Their bodies had been hijacked into thinking sexually, whereas before that, they weren't thinking sexually. And now we've got it all the time, so we don't really notice it.
People are thinking about, the sex side of it, or the football results, or, you know, anything, but why is my mortgage going up at such a rate and my wage never moves?
And it's constant distraction. Again, you know, this is part of trying to put women in the workplace as well. It means that men are distracted. Yeah, you've got an attractive woman in the workplace, so people are going to be treating her differently than they would be treating their normal workmates. All of this is things that, you know, people spoke about when they tried to force this in, but people don't bring up anymore, as if it doesn't matter or it doesn't happen. You know, it does happen. You get affairs in the workplace. Women will be treated differently to men. Distracts the men and interferes with the normal way that people would work, the normal thought processes. And if you've got them in politics, you've got politicians. What happens if one of them falls for the politician on the other side? Or what happens if a politician is trying to impress, you know, this woman, this female that's working there in politics, and instead of being loyal to their people, they're trying to impress this woman? And if this wasn't so, then the intelligence services wouldn't use women as honey traps. I mean, it's one of the most common things that they do, isn't it? Is send a woman to entrap a man.
Yeah, and you know, it works and it's proven, and these people do know what they're doing.
And yet we're told that pornography is free speech, and wow, aren't we free? And the rest of the world wants our freedoms.
Yeah, they say it's like liberating yourself, but really it's used to enslave people. This is the thing that people, ordinary people anyway, who don't really understand what's going on in the world today, are too busy trying to make a living and keep making ends meet. You know, this is what people don't understand. They think they're liberated, but they're actually being enslaved, and that's the trick of the Jew. Always has been.
Well, this is a subject of the podcast that I made with Andrew Anglin last week, was, you know, the real meaning of freedom. It's freedom from these things, not freedom to do these things. You know, if you indulge in them, it's like pouring oil on a fire. You know, it's not putting the fire out. It's just going to increase it. The more you put pornography around, the more people are going to be wanting to have sex all the time. It's not going to, you know, suppress that urge so that you can get on and do something else and concentrate that, you know, that energy into being creative. As I said, you know, this is how we conquered the world. This is how we conquered continents. Was through sublimating this sexual urge and concentrating it on other things. And now we're being told, well, no, we should just indulge in that. And it saps the man of his creative energy, because he doesn't have any creative energy anymore, because it's wasted through pornography, through indulgence.
what I can't understand for the life of me, why they have wards, mixed wards in hospitals. Can you tell me that one? That again. I just cannot get my head around.
Well, that again, that's going to be very dangerous. And it has been dangerous. How can you have that in a ward with different sexes? And especially if you've got older people, where you've got demented people, and people that aren't quite there in the head.
The next step after that is like the White House have now a transgendered toilet or restroom, as they say in America. It's, you know, that'll be the next thing in a ward. The transgenders and everybody else will be in as one. Where's this all leading us to in the next 50 years, I dread to think. I really do.
Well, this brings you around to this, the Russian guy, I forget his name, the one that advises Putin, Alexander, I think something, not Alexander Dumas, I forget his name, Dugin, Alexander Dugin. He says that where it's leading is once you go from getting rid of gender, then the only way you've got to go after that is getting rid of humanity altogether. So you're no longer human. You no longer have any of the traits of being a human, which is humanity. And the traits of humanity are charity, justice, love. Those are the traits. Mercy. These are all the traits of being human. This is where the word to be humane comes from. And to be a humane being means that you have a history of doing all of this. And this is why I say Negroes aren't human, because they don't have any history of actually being humane. They might have two legs, they might look like us, vaguely look like us, but they don't actually have any history of humane behavior. They don't have a history of a justice system. They don't have a history of ever showing mercy to anyone. You know, they don't have a history of ever showing charity to anyone. They're all about looking after themselves. And yet we do class them as human beings, humane beings, but we do that just based entirely on the fact that they have two arms and two legs and walk upright. So, I'm not probably a little bit more hardcore in that respect than you are, Dennis, but, you know, this is where it comes from.
You know, I mean, I see them being a tool as well for the Jews. I mean, the old slave trade, you know, the ships were owned by Jews, the auctions were run by Jews, and all the side effects were all run by Jews. It was a Jewish thing, the slave trade, in the first time they'd done it back in history. So I do see them as being used, as the homosexuals have been used, you know, as the feminine women have been used, the feminists. They're all tools of this. It's like I said, of the week, you know, when you've got the cage and you've got these two people inside, whether they're politically or feminists or whatever, the two people against each other, and the Jew sits out, he locks the cage and he sits outside and watch them take lumps out of each other. And that's exactly what they've done all through history.
Right, putting a cat and a dog in a cage and then sitting back and watching. They use whatever comes to hand as a weapon against us. And the problem is that our people don't realise that we're being fought against. Yeah, this is the insidious side of it. You know, we're told that it's liberation to allow this. You know, it's charitable to allow our countries to be flooded with these other races. It's equality. It's making everybody equal to put women in the workplace and to prevent them from staying at home and bringing up their children. And we're told that all these things are positive things. Democracy, it's a wonderful thing. It means that you have a say in the governing of your country. And yet all of it, it's like, it's like having icing on a horrible, great, dirty dog turd is what it is. You know, it's they try and make out these things are so good for us, and they sound good on the outside, but on the inside, it's poison.
Yeah, because what they do is the manufacturer, a society wants things straight away. Once you've got that implemented in society where they want everything now, that brings the whole ideology of what they're trying to do so much quicker. Because, you know, now you can go and borrow money and buy a flashy new car, but, you know, you've got to pay a usury on it, and that's good for a Jew. There's a host of other things like in education and other parts of this mass agenda what they have, to kill the masculinity of man and to kill nationalism, to break down borders and make it, as we started to show off with everybody in Europe, all the same, but led by these masters of the world.
It's immediate gratification is what they're selling. It's all immediate gratification. Whereas before, we used to delay. You know, you delay your reward for as long as possible. You would self-sacrifice. You would invest.
Self-sacrifice, build up character, yeah. You know, and certain, you know, things in you that what eventually made the man has now gone. Has now gone because it's a quick fix all the time.
So, you know, everything used to be about character building. Even if you look at these great buildings that we used to do, it used to take 200 years to build a cathedral. Mm-hmm. If you can look right the way back in time, I mean, it took centuries to build Stonehenge. You know, it would go on through generations, and you would pass on the building of something to the next generation. And it was built for the people in the third generation. And this is what the racial thing is about. It's about seeing yourself as a link in a chain. Not seeing yourself as an individual, which is how the Jews want you to, but to see yourself as a long link in a chain, going all the way back to your distant ancestors and going all the way forward to your distant descendants, and seeing yourself as just a part of that. And you know, what you've got from the past has only been entrusted in you to improve for the future. And it's the same with your genes. Your genes are just on loan to you. You know, that's your inheritance, which was given to you to pass on to your offspring. If you go and give that to another race, that's it. That's thousands of years worth of inheritance that's just been destroyed just for the sake of a quick bunk up.
There you go.
It is. It's just it's a fetish. It's like a fetish. It's like a sexual fetish.
Yeah.
Anyway, I think we better bring this podcast to an end. I'd like to end on a positive note. So I'll just remind
you. Yeah, but I can't think of one.
Well, 10 to 1, Bendigo Mosque, 10 to 1, we outnumbered the Reds.
Yeah. Well, that's an improvement, isn't it?
60% of Czechoslovakia would vote for Hitler.
So, yeah, well, there's actually a poll I saw somewhere, a poll the other day, saying that he was one of he topped the actual poll of one of the people that people like to bring back. He actually topped it. Number one. I think John Lennon was number two, I think, or Einstein, somebody like that. But yeah, so that's a positive, isn't it?
Maybe Jesus.
I think religion at this moment in time is probably at its weakest. So maybe, I don't know.
Well, when you think about it, when you think about these things, it's like an elastic band, isn't it? You know, you stretch it as far, but then eventually it's got to go back the other way.
Yeah.
And that's what's happening now. It's eventually going back the other way. It's taken some time for it to happen. It's like a spiral or like a pendulum. You know, it goes from one extreme to another. And our life, you know, the whole history of us is like a spiral continually going. It moves from one side to the other, but continually moves along its path at the same time. So, you know, I think things are looking up. Things are going to get better. They already are.
It doesn't really matter what happens in the world. I mean, at the end of the day, the whole universe and the whole, you know, thing of life is God's plan. So whether we lose X amount of wars, whatever, at the end of the day, God's plan is going to come right. So on a positive note, then I shall leave it.
That's it. We will win. Okay, so thank you very much for listening. Please tune in again next week, where we will hopefully be live again next week. And praise Christ and Heil Hitler.
Tuned in to Radio Stormer on the Daily Stormer.